This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Texas's Rio Grande Valley hugs the Mexican border. More than 90% of the people there are of Mexican heritage and proudly American. Traditionally, the Valley has voted solidly for a Democratic president. But over the last couple of election cycles, that's been shifting, and shifting rather quickly. The people of the Rio Grande Valley often feel taken for granted by national politicians and caricatured into two dimensions by the national media. So today, we're going to learn more about this remarkable part of the country and listen to some of the Rio Grande's voters tell us about their own lives. And we'll start today with Michael Rodriguez. He's deputy editor of a local paper in McAllen, Texas, called The Monitor. Mike, welcome to On Point.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
So first of all, tell us, what would you say makes the people of the Rio Grande Valley unique or different from the rest of the country or even the various other Hispanic populations in the United States?
Well, even though it's not very diverse in the sense that, as you said, over 93% of the population here is Hispanic, there is kind of a melting pot attitude here. And it's very live and let live. There's, I think, a kind of caring for family life that, although is everywhere, is a little bit more, I suppose, important here, you know? And some of the things that people would vote for aren't necessarily issues. Perhaps that's the case on a local level with local governments, mayoral races, school districts, even counties. But when it comes to matters of Congress, the Senate, presidential elections, it's a little different, and people won't necessarily vote the same way in the booths that they would for their local elections.
So can you tell us a little bit more about that? What exactly do you mean that they won't necessarily vote for issues? And how has that been playing into the interesting change that happened in the past two presidential elections?
Sure. In fact, I'll mention the recent race in McAllen. A lot of fuss was made about the new mayor of McAllen, Javier Villalobos, being a Republican. However, what people outside of the Valley don't understand is that it's been more than 20 years since a Democrat was mayor of McAllen. People don't vote based on party affiliations for their local races, and therefore, they don't vote primarily on political issues. They vote more about infrastructural issues, industry, also on personality, largely. So, and I'll give you, for instance, there's been mayors who've been barbers of local cities here who've been elected repeatedly, even though they've faced some issues with the law. And primarily because there are people who live down the street from them. There are people who've helped them. They've counseled them. They're individuals who've known their families for a long time. And although they may run into some trouble, although they may not see eye to eye even politically, they trust them. They're individuals who they feel they can talk to. And as a result, you know, are fit to lead their cities or their school districts or counties, like I said. Mm. And like I said, when it comes to issues of presidential elections, it gets a lot different.
Okay. You know, so this is, again, the lesson that we in the national media seem to be resistant to learning, is that you cannot characterize an entire people or entire region just based on how they vote in a presidential election. There's no such thing as just red or just blue. So, Mike, I'm wondering if you could, you know, play a special role throughout this hour and sort of be my wingman here and our guide through the Rio Grande Valley as we welcome in some other voices. Would you do that for me?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you.
Okay, so hang on here for a second, because first we're going to hear from a couple folks who are from Zapata, Texas. Cynthia Villarreal joins us. She's a retired school teacher and counselor, currently does educational counseling and consulting. Cynthia, welcome to On Point.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's great to have you. And your uncle joins us as well, Javier Villarreal. He's with us from Zapata as well. He's a rancher, raises cattle on 525 acres. Welcome to you, Javier.
Thank you.
So tell us, first of all, Mr. Villarreal, if you could, about your ranch and a little bit about your life in Zapata.
Well, I was listening to Mike. It's mostly the same way here in Zapata. And my cattle ranch is right now, we're in a deep drought, and it seems to me like the price of beef, when you go to buy it at the grocery store, it's high, and we sell cheap. And besides that, you introduced me as Cynthia's uncle. I'm her cousin, first cousin. And anyway, I feel the same way that your first interviewer was talking about Zapata. I mean, not about, but about the valley. Mm-hmm. Zapata is in the middle of the valley in Laredo, Texas. And I feel like when I was going to school, y todo, you know, because I'm 76 years old, we were very proud to be called Americans. And I was an American, and I still am a proud American. Therefore, I'll quit talking.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear you say you're still proud. There should be no reason to not be. But Cynthia, tell me, pick up where your uncle left off here. You know, again, I'm trying to sort of educate myself in terms of how we best talk about where you live and where your family has lived for a long time. So a simple way of putting it is, like, how would you identify who you are and your background, Cynthia?
Well, I have to say that definitely we are very proud to be Americans. We've always identified as Americans. We do take the best, I think, from both worlds, because we happen to be in an area where we have a strong influence, of course, from the Mexican heritage that we possess, as well as the American heritage we possess. And truthfully, we've taken the best from both worlds, everything from holidays, celebrations, music, and food. We even have our own Tejano music, which is almost a combination, a little bit of a blend between the Mexican music and the country music. And you can even hear the song sometimes be bilingual. So I just think that we have taken the best of both. We take great pride in being Americans. We are, and we possess a lot of things having to do with our heritage that is Hispanic. And we're very proud of that.
You know,
but at the same time, sometimes, you know, they see us, and I've always said this, you know, sometimes I, you know, even with friends that I have, and we talk about it, you know, I'm too white for my Mexican relatives. Sometimes they just see me, oh, she's so Americanized. She's so white. And then yet with my white friends, I can see where they see that I'm too Mexican to be completely white. So I'm too Mexican to be white, and I'm too white to be Mexican. And the truth is, because we are Texans, and this area, we're very proud of being Texans. And at one time, we didn't want to be. We did not want to be with Mexico, and we didn't want to be with the United States. We wanted to be our own republic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I know that my own family, they fought in those wars because, you know, we have our own beliefs. And of course, one of the biggest beliefs is pride in being respectful and having honor and dignity in the things you do. And we are Americans.
Yeah.
And we proudly, our family has served heavily in the military, in law enforcement. So, you know, when I feel that someone wants to ostracize me and pretend I'm not American enough, that's very offensive to me, because you know what? My family has served. My family has produced and helped, and we continue to do so, and we will always continue to do so. And I believe a great portion of the people in this area, they are determined to be better Americans and to show up that we can and we will continue producing. And you will see the Hispanic people are growing and they're starting to show up. I mean,
well, Cynthia, do you mind if I'm so sorry to jump in here, but you've actually said much that's so interesting that I would love to follow up with your uncle, and get him to respond to that. So Tavi, if I may, you both said that you're proudly American, and that resonates deeply very deeply with me, let me tell you. But also, we're living in a time and in a country where people like to apply labels to themselves and to others. So, you know, when you hear the word, you know, Latino, or some even use Latinx, or more broadly, people of color, Mr. Yeah. Villarreal, how do you respond to that?
Well, to me, Latino is from Latin America. I'm from Mexican descent, and like my dad used to say, you know, when we got this, what do you call them, Border Patrol stations, we used to stop by there, and they used to ask us, American? Yes, sir. Okay, go ahead. And then they started asking us, are you American? Yes. Are you a Hispanic? Yes, sir, from Hispanic. And what is she? She's a Hispanic, you know? My dad used to say
that. Oh, Hispanic. Okay, yeah.
Yes, I'm a Hispanic, and what is she? She's a Hispanic. So anyway, you know, what Cynthia has been saying, and she's correct, we're very proud. What we have lost also in the U.S. of A. has been respect. Respect has always been in my blood since the day that I can remember my mother and my dad telling me, you respect your elders, you respect your women, you respect the ladies, you respect. Now, you know, we can be driving and there's a lady in front of you and she shoots the finger at you. Mm. There's no respect, you know. Nowadays, there's disrespect rather than respect, and that's in all nature that has given us in this country.
Yeah, you know, so Tavi Villarreal and Cynthia Villarreal, hang on here for just a second. Mike Rodriguez, you too. I'm gonna ask you to reflect on what you just heard both of them say when we come back from a quick break. This hour, we are getting to know some of the people of the Rio Grande Valley in Texas. We'll have more voices when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're getting to know the people of Texas's Rio Grande Valley, a really important part of the country that's been misunderstood by the national media and the national political parties as well. And there's a lot of vibrancy and change going on there. So we've decided to listen to voices from the Rio Grande this hour. And I've been joined by Javier Villarreal. He is from Zapata, Texas. He's a rancher, ranches on 525 acres there. His niece, Cynthia, joins us as well. She's a retired school teacher. And we also have Mike Rodriguez with us from McAllen, Texas. He's deputy editor at The Monitor, a local paper there. And Mike, I wanted to turn back to you quickly as my wingman here and just reflect on what you heard Cynthia and Tavi talk about before the break regarding, you know, just how they see themselves as primarily American first. And you heard some resistance and understandable to the modern application of more sort of narrow labels, if I can put it that way.
Sure. Yeah. What you heard from the Villarreals is really quintessential Rio Grande Valley pride. And I'll give you, for instance, I was born and raised in a town called San Benito. It's in Cameron County, the southernmost county in Texas, actually, in the Rio Grande Valley. And that town, that one town, it's a small town, it's about 30,000 people, I think, has produced people such as Freddie Fender, you know, Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, and Bobby Morrow, the first American trifecta gold medalist. And other cities such as the city of Mission, for example, has produced Tom Landry, of course, you know, famed Dallas Cowboys head coach. And people here really take ownership of what belongs to them, of what's theirs. And that also pertains to how they work, how they live. The things that they find that are deeply Hispanic are their cuisine and their music. That doesn't always translate to their politics, obviously. Just like any other community you would find, you know, who may have certain cultures, certain traditions, they set that aside for how they live. And the lifestyles here, yes, definitely does take ownership of what they find to be proud of, or what, you know, things that they, I guess, they're deeply resonate with them. And what you hear from them is basically something in which you would find in, you know, almost any community in the Valley, especially in an area that's so industrious and religious. And I mean, there's some, a lot of people don't realize this, but in the Valley, the main employers are local governments and big box retailers. And outside of that, it's agriculture, you know? And so as we heard from Javier, he's a rancher, and that's obviously his livelihood. And there's a candidate who resonates with him as far as somebody who would represent him well, then that's what people would flock to, I think.
Yeah. You know, of course, we're also living in a time where everything national is rather local as well. And so that's what we're trying to understand, sort of how that's playing out along the entirety of the Rio Grande Valley. So if the three of you could just hang on here for a second and listen along with me, because we also spoke with Ross Barrera. He's a retired Army colonel who served for 34 years in the United States military, born and raised in Rio Grande City, population of about 14,000. And his house overlooks the tall grass of the river itself. He's so close to Mexico that his cell phone, actually, as we were talking to him, was bouncing back and forth between a Mexican cell tower and an American one. And Rio Grande City has actually voted heavily Democratic since the early 1900s. But when Donald Trump became president in 2016, Ross Barrera thought he had a chance to flip his own hometown to red. So he ran for mayor in 2020, going door to door, handing out flyers, posting on Facebook. But Barrera tells us he lost by just 400 votes.
I was disappointed because I really thought that I had the support of my hometown. You know, I was class president and I was a Veterans Day speaker. I mean, everybody knew who I was. But the next day after the election, I started getting calls from England, from Germany, New York Post and all that. And they were asking me about the Trump numbers that came in for Stark County. They didn't ask me about my loss of my election, because Trump got 8,200 plus votes, 600 votes short of Joe Biden. Who would have thought? What the heck happened? Everybody was asking me, what happened? So I gave him the answer. I said, what happened was they did not like the idea about defunding the police. That was one of them. I would say about 90% of the people that voted, they're like, no, we want the police to be funded. Here, a lot of folks respect the police because as a small community, they got an uncle, a brother, somebody, a husband that works in the police force. And they didn't like the idea that Biden was going to do away with the pipeline. We have a lot of folks here who work in the pipeline, and that's their livelihood. So that was the answer, that a lot of people voted for Trump because of that.
In the 1970s, Texas was heavily Southern Democrat. Most everybody voted Democrat. My dad voted Democrat since he was 18. Because that was the thing to do. That's what the party leaders would tell the local folks here, that you have to vote Democrat. And that's the way most people used to vote here. If you say that you were a Republican, the local people would shame you to say, oh, you want to be white? Oh, you want to be with the rich? But it wasn't until Donald Trump came on board where people liked what he was saying. People were tired and they wanted change. And now more people are saying, I'm a conservative. Now they defend themselves. I said, oh, really? I said, I'm a Republican, and this is why. Although I lost the election for mayor, I continue to energize local folks here to seek office in the Republican ticket. And we continue to seek other folks to seek office at the local level, at the county level, and the city, and even in the school district. We got to get conservatives in every level of government. That is our goal.
That's Ross Barrera, chair of the Starr County Republican Party, speaking to us from Rio Grande City in Texas. Javier Villarreal, How have you seen politics change over your lifetime in Zapata? And what do you think about it?
Okay, well, my father served in the Second World War. He came back in and he was working for a Central Power and Light Company, and he became general manager here in Zapata. But even though that last caller was talking about how proud he was being Republican, I vote for the person. I don't vote for the party. I am a registered Democrat in Zapata. There's a whole bunch of us that are registered, but we vote for the person. We don't vote for the party. I have never voted straight ticket in my life. Mm. And one of them was my father, which my mother was, you know, she started voting when I was around 6 or 7, because I used to call her and I used to tell her, "Hey, Mom, remember when you bought your first, I think it was $5 to buy your, I forget the name of it. But anyway, in order for you to vote, you needed to buy your certificate or whatever." Anyway, what that gentleman has been saying, you know, and I respect him and all of that, but we need to vote for the person, and we need to get rid of the person that does not comply with whatever he or she has said that they would do. Here in Zapata, I'm going to tell you, we just ran into a whole bunch of problems here where the commissioners gave themselves a race, and we're broke. Mm. And we all got together and we went out there, so they had to sign a certificate where they were abolishing their pay raise. And so we go on, you know, because I can say for myself that I am a proud American, but I believe in democracy. I don't believe in dictatorship, which I think Mr. Trump was trying to dictate.
Mm-hmm. Well, Javier Villarreal, speaking to us from Zapata, Texas, rancher on 525 acres where he raises cattle. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes, ma'am. You're more than welcome anytime.
It was really great to have you. Well, Cynthia, I want to hang on, keep you here in the flow of the show actually for quite some more time. We're going to bring in a couple of other voices, but I just wanted to briefly get your thoughts on what your relative said there. I mean, how have you seen politics change in Zapata over time? What do you think about it?
You know, one of the things that I recognize, especially in this last election, there had always been a reverence and respect to governmental officials. Needless to say, we started recognizing there were people that were not treated, ever since Watergate. And I was a child, I remember hearing about it, my parents discussing it. There has been a breakdown in the level of respect to government because there's been betrayal. And I absolutely agree with Davi. You know, we have to start, you know, with our leaders, you know, talking about respect and demonstrating respect, emulating respect in their actions and following through with what they promise. You know, Mike made a comment. He talked about, you know, we've been always proud and we've talked about being a melting pot. And in the last two elections, I felt a great shift from America being seen as a melting pot. We are not a melting pot. We are a tossed salad. Hmm. Because while there's so many of us coming from so many other countries, ultimately, and ethnicities, we still have to, you know, you don't go anywhere else and they say, well, I'm Spanish Italian, I'm French Italian. You know, in America, you're Italian American, German American, Mexican American, you know. So don't tell me we're a melting pot.
Are you upset
we're
about
not
that?
We're a tossed salad.
I mean, but
everybody's
it sounds like,
still being Cynthia, divided.
It sounds like you're upset about that.
Well, you know, if we're going, and truthfully, I love diversity. I think we can capitalize on the greatness of what every single ethnicity brings to the table. And we need to have that. And I think that's what can make America greater than it's ever been. But there's been a division, and that is my biggest resentment. And that is why I was completely against the hatred and the propagation of division, starting with the Muslims were so terrible. And, you know, I am a person that believes if America is to be the greatest country in the world, we must push for respect, love, compassion. I agree. There's a lot of restructuring that needs to be done. I do not agree. That is why I'm not completely far left. There's no way. But I am surely as heck not far right. You know, and there's a lot of us that come closer to the center because, again, while I've been predominantly more Democratic in my votes, you know, I just feel the Democrat and the Republican parties used to be two great parties that brought the best out of everything. And right now, truthfully, I think there's been a complete breakdown in the Republican. There is no Republican Party in my eyes.
Now, Cynthia, I do want you to just stand by here because there's a lot that you brought to the table that I'd love to explore with a couple of new people who are going to join us. So with us now from San Benito is Rogelio Nunez. He's co-founder of the Narciso Martinez Cultural Art Center and executive director of Casa de Proyecto Libertad. Rogelio, welcome to On Point.
Welcome. Thank you.
And you'll have to forgive me in advance for my absolute massacring of the gorgeousness of the Spanish language. So forgive me for that.
You're forgiven, but we'll learn.
So I'm getting my kids to learn as much Spanish as they can because I fully believe that we have to grow up in a multilingual society here, and I am sadly monolingual. So forgive me, but great to have you. And also joining us now is Perla Bazan. She's a substitute school teacher, used to work for the Department of Health and Human Services for the SNAP program, and she's with us from Rio Grande City in Texas. Perla, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me just first of all hear quickly from you. We just got a couple of minutes before we have to take our next break, but Perla, why don't you just, first of all, tell me a tiny bit about yourself and then respond to what you just heard Cynthia said about her almost despair about the major political parties right now.
Well, I've lived in a small community here in Starr County, Rio Grande City. It's called La Casita for 57 years. All my family, we grew up there. We have never, I have never felt, you know, that I'm not American. I grew up, I'm an American. Mexican, fine, we do recognize it, but I don't see myself as a Mexican. Because, like a lot of people, they go visit, we're going to Mexico to visit our relatives. We never did that when I was growing up. So, as far as I'm concerned, I'm an American, and I bleed red, white, and blue.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk. Okay. After we take a break about what that means in terms of politics. But Rogelio, I want to give you a chance before we have to take that break. Same thing. Tell me a little bit about yourself, and you know, and how you feel about how it seems like the political environment in the Rio Grande Valley has it been shifting?
Okay, so I'm born and raised in the small town of San Benito, actually 24,699. I went to school here. I graduated, went to college outside of San Benito, came back. I left as a Mexican, came back as a Chicano. Chicano meaning politically that we are a unique population within this country that presently and demographically is it somewhere about 36 million U.S. born. We are citizens. I agree. We have served in every aspect of the armed forces. We are law enforcement. We're teachers. We're laborers. 38% of where I'm at is poor, working class people. But we are, again, of Mexican descent. And while we might not want to think that demographically and historically, you can't get out of that. You can't avoid it. I think the best way to maybe look at it is that we still live in a very racial country in terms of blacks, African-Americans, Asian-Americans. Those populations are growing, have grown. We are growing as well. Texas has changed demographically dramatically, and it's changed because of Mexican immigrants who are now citizens because their children were born here.
Mm.
So, and then also, again, probably the best, one of the best indicators is that while we may think we are American, red, white, and blue, and we believe it, I don't say that. The Anglo-centric world we live in immediately defines us as either Mexican, Hispanic, etc.
Well, we have to just take a quick break here, and this is getting really, really fascinating. So Perla Bazan, Rogelio Nunez, and Michael Rodriguez, hang on here for just a moment. We are listening to Voices of Texas's Rio Grande Valley this hour, and we'll have more when we come back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the high cost of housing and zeroing in on the state of California. So, Californians, here's the question for you. How much are you paying for the roof over your head right now, whether it's in your mortgage payment or your rent? Give us a picture of how much housing takes up in your monthly budget, personally or for your family. And there have been some interesting ideas, new laws passed in California to help bring the cost of housing down. They would maybe stimulate a lot more building multifamily units on single family lots. So what are your ideas to bring down the cost of housing? So that's what we want to know from Californians. How much do you pay? Give us that picture. And how to bring the cost down. Tell us at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. Today, we are listening to voices and voters from Texas's Rio Grande Valley, an important and fascinating part of this country that has a lot to teach the rest of us, especially since it's been undergoing something of a political change over the past few presidential election cycles. And I'm joined today by Cynthia Villarreal. She's with us from Zapata, Texas. Perla Bazan joins us. She's with us from Rio Grande City in Texas. And Rogelio Nunez is with us from San Benito in Texas. And Mike Rodriguez with us from McAllen. And I'm just going to ask all of you to listen along with me for another couple of minutes, because we heard from Ross Barrera earlier, Republican. Now let's listen to Rochelle Garza. She was born and raised in Brownsville, cheek by jowl with the Mexican city of Matamoros, excuse me. She's a lawyer who's now running for Congress as a Democrat, and she proudly calls herself a fronterista, a citizen of the U.S.-Mexico border.
I am a self-identified fronterista. So I'm from Brownsville, Texas, grew up in the Rio Grande Valley. My dad grew up as a farmer. He's one of 13 kids. Grew up as a poor farmer here in Brownsville and had the fortune of going to school and became a teacher, met my mom, and then went to law school and became a judge. They instilled in my family very strong values about, you know, really supporting each other, looking out for each other, treating everyone with dignity. You know, they're very Catholic people, so faith was a big part of our lives. Our community has been ignored for a really long time, and there are a lot of needs that we do have that are not being addressed. Healthcare is a major one. We have really high rates of poverty. So I decided that it was a good time for me to run for office. So I'm running as a Democrat for Texas 34, for the congressional district, Texas 34. during the Trump years, we did see a lot of changes in the region, and there was an influx of jobs, mostly in enforcement. And the reality is that everyone in this community knows someone who works in law enforcement for Border Patrol, for example, and they also know someone who's undocumented. I have family members that have worked in detention centers or for Customs and Border Protection. You know, those are the jobs that people need in order to get into the middle class. And even in my own family, you know, I've had a cousin who worked for Customs and did tell me, I'm voting for Trump because I want job security. Democrats have not reached voters where they're at in the Rio Grande Valley, in this particular region. We haven't communicated the things that we have done, like the child tax credit, or the things that we're going to do, like making sure that people have health care. You know, I think there's a lot of disillusionment for voters here, for people here, because, you know, they have voted blue and they have voted for Democrats for decades. And we still have these pervasive issues of poverty, lack of job diversity. These are things, and lack of healthcare. These are things that are still persistent. And we are the party with the solutions. And we need to present those solutions that we have made and future solutions that we will make.
Rochelle Garza from Brownsville, Texas. She's running for Congress as a Democrat in Texas's 34th congressional district. Now, Perla, if I can turn back to you here. Rochelle described someone who sounds a lot like you, because if I understand correctly, you were formerly a Democrat, but changed parties in 2016, voted for Donald Trump in 2016, and your family then later joined you and did similarly in 2020. So what was it that was missing from the Democrats' message that Rochelle said that caused you to switch?
It's exactly what Ms. Garza just said. It's exactly, that's what's been happening. Democrats have not, I mean, have really not given any importance, you know, to this area. When they're running their elections or campaigning and all that, oh, they promise you this and I'm going to do this. Once they sit in office, that's it. They forget about you. You know, we don't see any progress or anything of what they promised, you know, during their campaigns. They don't do anything. And especially here in Rio Grande City, Starr County. Now, here are there's no improvement to anything around here. Mm. There's just like promises, never kept. And she just plainly, clearly said, and it's the truth. Democrats don't do anything. Once they find out they have an opponent, that's when they start doing all this and that. Uh-huh. You know, they start giving money left and right and this. Oh, and I did this and I did that. Where were you? You know, mm-hmm. when you first got elected, that you said you're going to promise to do all this. But up to today, you haven't kept your promises. You haven't done anything.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. It doesn't matter, you know, who runs or whatever. Once they get into office, that's it.
Yeah.
They
so let me just turn to Rogelio here and get your response to that. You hear how disaffected Perla feels, Rogelio.
True. I mean, historically, yes, South Texas has been Democrat. Texas has been Democrat. I come from a moment when neither the Republican Party nor the Democratic Party were doing anything for us as Mexican-Americans in the state of Texas. So emerged a third party in 1970 called the Raza Unida Party. It's a response to the lack of those two major parties doing anything with us but taking us for granted. We did put a moment of 10 years. We did create a moment where in 72, with the gubernatorial candidate, Ramsey Muniz, secured 6% of the Texas vote, and that scared the Democrats. And it scared them so badly that they began to then create moments of where we as Mexican-Americans could participate in the Democratic Party at levels that we had never participated before in terms of the National Executive Committee, et cetera. From then on, again, the 80s, move on, the 90s, the 2000s. And again, my concern has always been that elected officials, in this case, Democrats, again, are not working at the grassroots level. On the other hand, we don't have a lot of grassroots activism as we see in other parts of the country, including Texas, which means Houston, for example, mm-hmm. that the activism has turned around a county judge who's 29 years old, who's Democrat, who, again, through voter suppression and Abbott and all the Republican representatives in Texas, have targeted Houston as a place that we got to make that place where it has a lot of trouble voting because the numbers are showing that they are voting in high numbers, and Biden did win Harris County. So we have been ignored. On the other hand, the Republican Party will never and has never done anything for Mexican-Americans. I mean, Trump's administration is probably the worst one we've ever had. I mean, his first words when he announced was, they're Mexicans, they're rapists. He had no trouble identifying who we are. Therefore, in my own perspective, we shouldn't have any trouble identifying who we are either. We speak Spanish. We speak English. We do have a Mexican heritage. We do have culture, tradition, food. But we also are active politically and have been. Now, we may not be at the numbers that we want to be, but that takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of grassroots work.
Yeah. So Rogelio and Perla, stand by here for just a second. Because, Cynthia, I wanted to ask you directly, and I'll hear from everyone on this, but the other thing that Rochelle Garza brought up in that little bit of tape we heard from her was the fact of the border itself, right? I mean, it's almost like a living thing where you are. It's not just a line. I mean, it's people, it's commerce, it's it's the movement back and forth, it's culture. I just wonder, I mean, with immigration constantly being such a hot button issue in the United States, I mean, what's your view, Cynthia, of immigration, of what the border means?
Well, you know, what's funny is that, you know, one of the things that many of us that are Tejano say is that part of the people that are Hispanic, and I do identify myself as Hispanic, and I'm very proud of it, is that some of us did immigrate. Some of us, you know, really, we did not cross the border. The truth is, and we always say this, the border crossed us, because my people have been in this area since, you know, the late 1500s. So, you know, when I per se, for example, do not feel like an immigrant, because really, you know, we were here in the land. We love the land. We still have land that was given to our families from the Porciones, from the King of Spain. But our own heritage, you know what? A lot of what Rogelio says is true. You know, we recognize that we have not been sometimes respected or recognized. Just look at the military and the amount of contribution that the Hispanic soldiers have done to the military in honors in proportion to the percentage of population in the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things that the Hispanics have done that have not been recognized. And I think this is shifting because we have the best of both worlds. We take pride in who we are. I will never deny my Mexican roots, because nobody can deny what you are. You are what you are. Whether you like it or not, you are what you are.
Yeah.
Yes, the border is there. At one time as a child, I never realized it was the border. We would go eat across, you know, with our family from across, because half of our family ended up on the southern part of the river. And the other half ended up on the northern part of the river. So some of us were Americans and some ended up being Mexican citizens. So really, it didn't become such a big issue until they started, you know, the Border Patrol emerged into being a much bigger element in control.
Yeah.
And right now, the immigration, there is fear in too many being brought too soon. Absolutely. You know, anybody, we need to come in legally. We need to come in the correct way. We need to save America first.
Yeah. And with that, because we're running out of time, Cynthia Villarreal from Zapata, Texas, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, so we've just got a couple of minutes left, and Mike and Rogelio and Perla, I'm going to wrap up with the three of you. And Perla, first let me ask you, why do you think that the Republican Party would serve the people of the Rio Grande Valley better than the Democratic Party did? Because I heard you say that the Democrats weren't doing anything there. I mean, do you have evidence or proof yet that the Republicans will directly do more for you?
Well, no, I don't have evidence. But I mean, we have to see the light at the end of the tunnel. We need to shift and, you know, see what happens, because, I mean, These have been years. These have not been months. These have been years of Democratic and Democratic. Well, now let's see. Okay, let's go. Let's vote Republican, conservative, or whatever. Let's vote for this person and see what he does. Okay, one of the things that made me vote for Trump was that he said that he wanted to do more for veterans. Mm. My family, my father was a veteran, my uncles, my cousins, and everything. And you know that they have been treated very unfairly. That's what made me vote for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was one thing. As to anything else, whatever, I mean, everybody says you're racist, you're this, you're that. And the problem is that they say, well, Trump this, Trump that, Trump that. The point was that Trump did not sugarcoat what he was saying. He was telling it like it was and like it is.
Mm.
And people aren't used to hearing the truth. That's the problem around here.
Yeah.
People don't like to be told the truth. And it runs all over the valley. They don't like to hear the truth.
Oh.
That's when they say, oh, no, he's this, he's that. They start calling names.
Well, Perla Bazan from Rio Grande City, Texas, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Yeah. Another thing is like...
Perla, I really don't mean to cut you off. I only have 2.5 minutes left for the show. I don't mean to be rude, but I want to give Rogelio and Mike a chance to have a last word here, too. So forgive me for that. It's just the clock really determines all our fates here. But Rogelio, do you want to just take a quick minute to respond to Perla so that I can give Mike the last word?
Well, I already think we have the Republican presence without being elected in South Texas. We have the continuation of, but more extremely in these last 4 years, of what we call the militarization of the border. I mean, there is a whole interest in securing the border, but the way the Republicans have done it in terms of the Trump administration and the Abbott administration is to keep pouring in more law enforcement into this area. 1,000 DPS by Abbott, the military, more border patrol, more customs, border protection, the wall, so on and so forth. So the idea is to secure the border, quote unquote, but something to a degree that it's false.
Mm.
Now, false meaning that the border is very, very, very wealthy. It is one of the wealthiest borders in the world. And there's interests that are vested in making sure that the goods and the products, 80% of all the produce in the U.S. comes through FAR, Texas.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
well,
we do live in a wealthy world.
Rogelio Nunez? Again, I apologize to you, as I did to Perla, that I have to cut you off there. But I want to give Mike a last word here. But Rogelio Nunez from San Benito, Texas, thank you so much. And Mike, we just got, sorry, but 45 seconds left here. But what are the lessons you think the rest of the country ought to learn from the voices, the really diverse voices that we heard just there from the Rio Grande Valley?
Well, I think it means that you can really lose any community just simply by not being present. And I'll give you, for instance, in 2016, Cameron County had voted for Trump 31% of their vote, 2020, 42%. In Hidalgo County, it was 27% in 2016, and then 2020 was 40%. Mm. There is a rising sentiment, but just like the Democrats, that the Republicans are not present in both policy and also in, you know, simply just reaching out to the people, they can just as well lose this area. They can lose ground here, too.
Not being present, a key lesson there, and also understanding the complexity and the variety of points of view within just individual families as well. So Mike Rodriguez, deputy editor of The Monitor in McAllen, Texas, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Meghna.
So just a few of the voices from the Rio Grande Valley. Such a pleasure to talk to you all. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.